Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau.
And I'm Yujiro.
The intro is cracking up.
Were you putting it on for that one?
No.
What happens when you call 911?
Robber gets away?
Someone's bleeding.
Is it you?
No. Are they still alive, sir?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no. All right, well, this follows Apocalypse Part 1, but we're actually going to upload Apocalypse Part 2 next week because we want to stay a little topical. We found out that Battleship, the movie that we saw after we recorded part one, was released in Japan before it was released in North America.
Which I'm kind of surprised about.
Huh. They wanted to... there's some scheduling if they went head-to-head with some other movies. Now they're going head-to-head with some other movies.
It's for money. If they do a tour around the world first, then they can post bigger earnings on opening day, and the film can be considered a success.
Interesting.
Mm. Avengers is doing the same thing.
Mm. Oh, I guess it's released... It's being released in a few countries.
Yeah. Not Japan. We're going to wait until August for that.
Grr. Oh, Chris, wow. Smash.
Yeah, because Thor and Captain America was so good.
Oh, really Captain needed America to... was all right. I liked it.
Captain America was okay, yeah. But we've actually have a thing called the Thor test.
Yeah, and Loki's plan.
Yeah, the Loki's plan based on that movie.
Which, just in case you don't know, listeners, is if we fall asleep while listening to our own podcast, we know it's time to cut things out, as the editors of Thor didn't.
All right, it wasn't terrible.
So we watched Battleship.
Which also actually wasn't terrible, surprisingly.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
It was a lot of fun. It wasn't deep or complicated or anything, but it was fun.
Wow, you all liked it? That practically never happens.
Yeah, I know. I think that's probably because I went into it with absolutely no expectation and expecting it to be terrible, and it surprised me.
Hmm. Yeah, so for anybody who doesn't know, it's based on the Hasbro game Battleship. So it was quite clever what they did to incorporate board game.
I actually give them a lot of credit. When, you know, thinking about turning a board game, and of all board games, Battleship, into a full-fledged movie, they showed some good restraint in it.
There's no, you sank my battleship.
That's the exact specific restraint I'm referring to, yeah.
And no one's going to sink my battleship. Mm-hmm. You know, the variation.
Yeah.
Is that necessarily a bad thing, though? I mean, the movie was kind of cheesy anyway, so wouldn't it have been like just as cheesy, like, you sunk my battleship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the cheesy parts, it was one of those movies where you're like, oh, well done. All right, I'll give it to you.
I see what you did there, yeah.
I'll give that to you, sure.
Yeah, I know it's coming, but, okay. Yeah.
I mean, there were a couple moments where we laughed out loud at the movie, but it's kind of, you just kind of went with it.
Yeah.
I think you were, like, still at the concession stand or something, because, like, the beginning of the movie...
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
It starts with, like...
It was a great movie. first five minutes...
No, I was going to say, Chris, because, like, you know, the Hasbro logo slides by, and I think both of us just kind of look at each other and start laughing, like, already. It's, like, right at the beginning. You're like, this is so ridiculous.
Right.
Like, this movie is Hasbro.
Well, it was funny, because people who know, like, Alexander Skarsgård, who's a giant, he's, like, 6'6",
oh, yeah.
And blonde hair. And then his younger brother is played by Taylor Kitsch, who's about 5'6", with brown hair.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even try to hide it. There's nothing about, like, a different mother, a different father. They even have them putting their arms around each other just to accentuate just how different they look. And they're just like, yeah, whatever, eh?
They're brothers.
Yeah, your brothers, roll with it, go! Yeah.
You're watching a movie called Battleship, based on the board game Battleship.
With aliens, I might add.
With aliens.
But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would recommend that.
Rihanna, she did a good turn.
What was with her always having to wear the hat? Did you notice that?
Gangster.
No. Even like when she was coming out of the water, it was like on to something with her hair. Or a wig or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe she didn't want to get her hair cut.
Or wet.
Maybe. No, but like seriously, for, as far as pop stars turned to movies, she did right.
Okay. Yeah. And then those people who like Friday Night Lights, so appreciate that it's directed by Peter Berg, who directed the movie Friday Night Lights and the pilot and produced the TV series. And that is Tim Riggins, Taylor Kitsch. And he starts off as Tim Riggins.
He played himself in the beginning.
Yeah. And then he was Tim Riggins in the Navy.
Yeah, he kind of
They just
was, yeah.
cut Tim Riggins' hair. And then it was like, We were joking. We were like, look at that little kid from Friday Night Lights. Hey, Tim Riggins is in the Navy.
Tim Riggins.
People who haven't watched Friday Night Lights are like, what?
That'd be me and Yujiro slowly shaking our heads here.
And all that business.
So watch Friday Night Lights.
And then you'll get all of our jokes.
And then watch Battleship. And then you'll understand.
And then there was Jesse Plemons, and he's also from Friday Night Lights. And he's playing the character he plays in Friday Night Lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who's playing his character?
All right. People now out there know what I meant.
No, they don't.
All right.
It's interesting watching it in a Japanese theater, too, because about half of the cast are Japanese actors or playing
half?
Japanese characters.
One guy was Asano Tananobu?
A lot of the extras, sorry. Yeah. Not main characters.
Well, they definitely did that for the international audience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really interesting to have, like, the beginning, it was the Americans versus the Japanese, and, like, there were a bunch of Americans on screen saying, get those Japs, and the Japanese guy yelling back. They said
during the soccer game.
People
don't expect, like, some sort of battle.
Oh, yeah, they're all good friends later on in the movie, yes. But
they were playing a soccer game. That was Japan versus America.
What kind of idiot are you, Hopper? The idiot who looks where he shoots or the idiot who doesn't look? Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go with that.
Seriously, that was a line in the movie.
Yeah, I was there.
He was not disputing.
I don't know. It was kind of self-conscious sitting there. There was a lot of other Japanese people around that kind of, oh, that's cheesy.
My Japanese person speaking English?
No, just the caricatures that they played in the soccer game.
The guys didn't have enough of a character to have a caricature.
One guy was playing goalkeeper. Like, I don't know like, what character these people had.
All right, okay, cool.
Sorry.
Cool.
I didn't get that either. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I really, really liked it. Yeah, so I'd recommend. And it was the first time since Godzilla where I had a beer in the movie theater. Because in Japan, you can do that. You can buy draft beer.
But you wish you had a beer during Thor.
Yeah, I probably would.
You slept through the whole thing then.
Yeah. No. You just kind of enjoy it a bit. Yeah. Although I did nod off a little bit during that.
Hmm.
But Battleship leads into the big topic that we're going to do today, and that's board games. We know that Hasbro has been doing a lot of movies based on its toys and its games. So we're thinking about what other games it should make into movies. And I read an article recently, and Hasbro's got a pretty good strategy going. They've got a deal with Universal, and they pay about, $1 million to get a script ready. And then what they'll do is they'll sell or give, depending on what their deal is, this script. And then the studio pretty much takes all the other costs. And, I mean, that's work for Transformers, G.I. Joe, Battleships, just come out, and I think they've estimated that Hasbro's made about $1.6 billion in, like, toys and merchandising sales because of these movie deals.
Pretty impressive, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I know when Transformers came out, obviously they have, like, the newly revamped toys, but like, I'm kind of surprised that, well, I guess I haven't really been looking for it, but I'm surprised I haven't seen, like, a movie version of Battleship, because, I mean, if it's the movie inspired by the game... Like, I haven't...
Battleship toys.
Yeah, or even just, like, the game, right? Like, I haven't seen a redone box with...
Alien ships instead
of
Battleships.
Yeah, alien ships. Or even not even if it's alien ships, just I haven't seen a box with the Battleship movie logo on it or... Because, I mean, this is a perfect opportunity for them to redo the style of the box, you know?
Well, they came out with a new version of Battleship with spaceships.
Called Spaceship?
Battleship Space, I don't know.
Space Battleship.
Maybe, no. But what else have they got in the pipeline? They've got, of course, another Transformers, another G.I. Joe. They've got, believe it or not, Candyland.
Which barely qualifies as a game.
Maybe Universal dropped that one, but another studio picked it up. Oh, and it's going to be with Adam Sandler, I heard.
Oh.
Oh,
man. Yeah.
And I think they're trying to get something going with Stretch Armstrong. Remember that toy?
I remember that.
I
can see that, you know, a hero that's stretchy, Mr. Fantastic, whatever, that's cool.
I really thought Stretch Armstrong was all that popular, too.
Yeah, they said they haven't done anything with him in 20 years, but maybe if, like, a movie or an animated movie is released with Stretch Armstrong, then they'll start doing something with him.
I guess I can kind of see it. I mean, Transformers never really went away, but you kind of had, like, a quote-unquote, like, new generation to watch Transformers, as opposed to people who grew up, like us, watching the 80s cartoon, but... So I could see that with Stretch Armstrong, you know, like, kids now, they don't know who he is. It's like, oh, he's brand new. You're like, no, he's not.
So this is all he does? We just pull him and stretch him? Yeah.
Isn't that awesome? Yeah. No, not really. Well, you gotta remember, kids, back in the day, we didn't have smartphones. This is
but we have them now. And I don't know if this is, it was in pre-development or pre-production, but Ouija, the Ouija board. It's a movie based on that.
I mean, come on. They made a movie out of Pirates of the Caribbean, or Disney made a movie.
Well, it's not that.
Well, that's got pirates, though.
Yeah, I know, but my point is, like, I see it as kind of similar. You could do, like an Eddie Murphy style haunted mansion thing with Luigi.
Yeah, that was a success.
I didn't say it was a success. All I say is somebody did it, and I could see Luigi doing Candyland the same there. Thing. Yeah.
No, they'll have to do it like Beetlejuice.
Well, just thing I'm thinking is how many movies, granted, like B movies, have I seen based off of Ouija? No, they use a Ouija board and they summon a demon or some monster or some witch or something.
Really, I don't think they'll do a scary movie with Ouija.
I think they don't want to family fair. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'd be like they summon Beetlejuice or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, I guess like Ouija boards are in those movies, right?
Yeah, they buy a Ouija board and it kills the whole family. not exactly a ringing endorsement of the game.
Family fun.
Let's burn the board.
Get your own board to burn. It stores everywhere.
Yeah. Actually, like the original Ouija board, that was actually a little bit dangerous because like the plastic.
Summon demons.
No. What I'm saying is like the plastic piece like had like the hole that you look through, and then it actually had like a metal tack through the plastic in the hole, and that was the pointer thing. Like the old version I found, like in my grandmother's like attic, right? That was the official one, and there was this rusty old.
That wasn't for pointing. That was for drawing blood as a sacrifice.
It did, because like I grabbed that thing and I'm like, ah, and it still didn't work. So yeah, we'd use a crock of crap. I offered it blood and it gave me nothing.
Burn it out of spite.
So what would be some board games or toys you'd like to see that make a movie of?
Monopoly.
Yeah, they're talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
It'd probably be like Wall Street or something.
That's exactly what I was imagining, yeah.
Yeah.
Except you have to have a character with a giant round head and a monocle.
The hero jumps up in a giant shoe. Let's go! Jump on that dog.
Oh, no, they probably have a talking dog. Who's the dog? Oh, he's a banker too. What? A banker and a dog?
Hilarity.
Go to jail. They got, what, Jenga is one of their properties?
Mm-hmm.
They could do like the Jenga Tower. Starting to collapse. Get the architect.
Aliens coming, like
Mr. Jenga,
pulling pieces out of buildings.
I can see that. I can see it. It's in the future. Humanity has like, you know, giant buildings made out of individual pieces. An alien comes and start knocking them over. You gotta get it back in.
I tell you what,
that's not Jenga. It's not putting it back in. It's taking it out. So it's kind of be like they'll have to like cut some girders.
All right,
cut some girders. And it's like, what? How's that make it more stable?
Actually,
you don't know.
I can actually kind of see that. Like, an alien ship comes down and just kind of, like, starts cutting pieces out of buildings and then, like, tracking them out and abducting the people
inside. Yeah, just like in Battleship. It wasn't the humans versus each other. It was like, now the aliens are playing Jenga with our buildings. And I know they don't own it, that the next one, Tetris.
Somebody call the Friday Night Lights crew.
Yeah.
Now, I reckon Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Oh, that is one of their properties.
Oh,
yeah. You imagine that? Just a swarm of hungry hippos.
There's only four.
Across the land.
Yeah.
There weren't any aliens in the original Battleship.
All right. Point well taken.
They got, what is it? Crocodile Dentist?
Crocodile Dentist.
Is one of their, you one know, of their the, properties?
It's got like the plastic crocodile, and you got to take out the teeth. And
I could see that.
I'd be like,
chomps the mouth.
That would be so good if Steve Irwin were still around.
Yeah, or you just get like, what's his name? Paul Hogan?
Yeah, Paul Hogan.
I'm a dentist. What I do, mate.
That's not a tooth. Lots of tooth.
That's not a board game. This is a board game.
He went to fill their teeth, and he filled, and they filled his heart.
I don't know what's funny at the party we screwed up with.
And he filled their, never mind.
He filled their, whoa, you gotta keep this PG.
Actually, they have Mask. It's a toy. Remember Mask?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, versus Venom?
Definitely, I can definitely see that. Same.
They wore masks. Yujiro was like, what the? It was their way of combining G.I. Joe with Transformers.
Oh, what was the name? We looked it up for the 80s cartoons episode.
Venom?
Yeah, Venom. It was like Villainous Evil Organization of something
Menace.
Like that. Menace, yeah.
Malice, something like that.
Villainous
yeah.
Evil.
That'd be pretty cool.
Organization.
Yeah, like, I can totally see it. Cause like they had all of their vehicles that transformed into other vehicles.
I'm tired of this car. I need a bike.
Or we could do, they had Light Bright. Remember that?
Yeah, Light Bright.
You could do something like...
How would you make a game out of that?
Something like Green Lantern Corps.
And light, bright Corps!
No, they go, light, bright, turn on the magical, colored lights.
Yeah.
And they'd all be like a different color.
Like Care Bears or something?
I was thinking more Green Lantern, but yeah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is right. I like it.
I love how the toy is actually just like a computer screen with a light bulb behind it.
And a clown face.
Yeah, that you plug pegs into, yeah.
They had that dinosaur property. Guys who were back in time, they rode dinosaurs and put missiles on them.
Dino Riders.
Those poor creatures.
Yeah. That is that Hasbro?
I don't
Probably.
Know. Yeah. I played with it along with my Mask toys.
Yeah,
Brontosaurus always tried to blow up the helicopter bicycle.
Those Dino Riders, they were pretty cool.
Yeah.
Those were cool toys.
They also have, like, Risk and Axis and Allies.
Oh, yeah.
So you can do, like, a straight-up war, but then they have, like, pull up that board, it's move the pieces around.
More on board games than on movies. Did you ever play the Future Risk? I think it was, like, Risk 2000 or something like that.
Risk 2010, probably.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. But it was actually really, I don't want to say really interesting. It was still Risk, but it was fun. They had, they had nukes, and you could take over Risk. The moon, and they had, like, your army had a general character who could have special powers. This is a pretty good update of Risk.
Yeah. Yeah, Mr. Potato Head.
That's one by Hasbro.
Yeah. That's the, on whatever studio lot, maybe the Universal Studio lot, that the CEO, what's his name, Brian Goldner goes to. I guess you can tell his office, because he's got Mr. Potato Head in front of it.
I reckon they should make Mr. Potato Head, but they should make it like a horror mystery kind of thing, like an old Sam Spade kind of detective story. He puts on different disguises for it. Someone going around killing potatoes. It's a masher film.
He's still going.
Yeah. I'm so funny.
Oh, then what we were talking about before, Guess Who?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be easy to do. They have like all the pictures of all the suspects. Did he have mustache? No.
Did he have an eye patch? No.
Click, 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 click. And you'd be like, who has an eye patch these days?
Yeah, exactly.
None of them. But like five of your pictures have eye patches.
Was he a pirate? No. Click, click. All right. I was like, you could do like a romantic comedy of that.
Guess who? Is it the guy with the eye patch? No.
No, I don't hate anyone with an eye patch.
I would be like speed dating or?
No, I was thinking like.
I like guys with eye patches.
Yeah.
No, well, only one. You do like a little montage of the Guess Who, and it's all the losers that she dates before she gets to the, you know, the guy that she met at the beginning of the movie and finds out that she really loved him.
Yeah.
Like every romantic.
Yeah, exactly. Comedy. Like every romantic comedy, yeah. Now, basically, you just, like, you meet the person one time, but you don't really remember what they look like, and so you kind of, you know, have to, for various reasons.
A lot of successful dates there, I'll win.
Quiet you. Never mind.
You could do a remake of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, but except with the board.
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Guess Who.
I bet you didn't guess that he was black.
You know why I didn't guess? Because none of the people on the Guess Who board are people of color!
But at least he's got an eye patch.
I am surprised.
But, you know, if we're talking about Hasbro properties, I'd love to see them spend $1 million on a script for D&D.
Didn't they already do that?
They tried, yeah.
And it
failed? They made two movies.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that the other movies were great, but I would like to see that done.
There's something about the licensing that some of the D&D licenses are a bit tied up in other deals.
Oh, I see. So they considered it.
They made two movies. There's been two D&D movies.
Making a good movie.
Yeah, well,
putting more effort into it.
I don't think they're gonna, seeing as how well the first one did.
They made an effort in the first movie. It was a bad movie, but they had Jeremy Irons. They had Thora Birch, and she was coming off of American Beauty, so she was still acting.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm sorry, I didn't know you're such a fan.
I said it was a bad movie, but it was, I think they failed in what they did with the script and the
Which
direction.
Which is why I'd like to see them spend $1 million on getting a good script. Like they did with Battleship.
That was a good script.
Shut up. Though, if I had a choice between watching the D&D movie and Battleship, I'd have a sandwich.
I was trying to think of something, you know, I'd maybe do anything except watch the D&D movie.
The second one's not, it's not great, but it's better
than the first.
Better than the first.
Which is not saying a lot.
Yeah. It's like that line in Ed Wood, and it's like, oh, you saw one of my movies. What'd you think? Worst movie ever made. Well, the next one will be better.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the other reason why we decided to do an episode on board games is because we just finished attending, or some of us did, just attended the Japan International Gamers Guild Kansai Branch's Golden Week Convention. And that's 3 days of gaming and all you can eat and drink junk food.
And friends.
And fajitas, or burritos. Yeah.
I believe they were called
wraps. You paid for those.
Right, but you could eat
what Lyle's saying is, he didn't.
Man. Certainly got my money's worth out of those chips and trail mix. Boy, that was a wonderful trail mix.
Yeah, jelly beans actually went well with peanuts and, like, yeah, almonds.
Yeah, and M&M's and, yeah.
You should try it.
Yeah. I would have loved to, yeah.
But in between the trail mix and the chips and
the wraps, yeah.
The wraps, we also played some games. So what we're going to do, and we actually played a lot of games that were new for us, so we're going to give a little review. So Wayne, you went out and, straight after the convention, you went out and bought Lords of Waterdeep.
Yes, I did, and I've lost every game I played since then, so I kind of don't like it anymore.
Did you win the first game?
No, but I didn't get blown out like the other two I played.
Unless you've lost every game you've played.
All right. I didn't win every game I played, smart guy, but I didn't come in last in that first 5-player game I played.
Take that, smart guy. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I was kind of reluctant to play Lords of Waterdeep at first, just because it was a D&D themed kind of board game, which I kind of thought it wouldn't be that interesting. But it's just sort of like a basic worker allocation game, kind of like Agricola or Fresco or any of the other kind of games where you allocate workers. But it seemed a lot more fun and at least more interactive than Agricola. So I really enjoyed playing it that first time I did.
Could you give me just a bit more on what Lords of Waterdeep is?
Oh, sure. So in this one, each player takes on the role of one of the, 11 Lords of Waterdeep trying to control the city. And so you get kind of like a character card, which gives you special, not victory conditions, but a special goal you're kind of working towards. And then you place your workers around the board, which looks kind of like a map of Waterdeep. And I guess the resource you collect is money and adventurers. So you kind of have like the four classic adventurer types for D&D. It's like fighter, mage, priest, and rogue. And you score victory points by, sending them off to complete quests. Instead of farming like an Agricola, you're kind of hiring and then sending out adventurers to complete these quests for you.
For each turn, you have a limited number of people, quote-unquote, and you place them on different areas on the map. And by your placement, you can gather resources or spend resources or things like that, just in case you haven't played Agricola or whatnot.
Oh, yeah, fair enough, yeah.
It's fun.
Is that it?
I played early this evening before the podcast with Wayne, and I had a lot of fun. It's like you said, it's a more interactive version of Agricola without the headache of adding up your points at the very end. It's the D&D theme. I didn't see that as a minus at all. In fact, I quite liked it. And the quests and the artwork was pretty good. Pretty fun. And it was great that I spanked Wayne in it totally. Great.
Yeah. I think I prefer it over Agricola or Fresco. Maybe because it has the D&D theme. All it is like you're gathering color blocks and you're matching color blocks to these quests, these cards that you drew. And I don't know. Kind of the worker allocation. I can't get too excited about them.
Yeah, it's true. You are just kind of like plunking a piece on the board.
It's no Space Hulk, roll dice and scream, but yeah.
Well, you could have placed your guy and screamed, Chris.
I tried.
But it does have some extra elements that it makes it superior to Fresco or Agricola. One of them is you're getting intrigue cards, which helps you to interact with the other players. They're not overpowering, but they give you little things that you can help to make, your turns better or to make your opponent's turns worse.
To be fair, the second two games we played with Lyle and Chris were only two-player games. And the first one I played was with five people, the full five people. And that was a lot more interactive just because there were more people playing intrigue cards, and some of the intrigue cards do something for each opponent, or like you can draw quests equal to the number of people playing, or you can get resources equal to the number of opponents. So in a two-player game, it's not all that interesting. There's more kind of interaction, I guess more going on in a five-player game.
That's what you mean. So, a lot of the intrigue cards were on the vein of you take two gold coins and then give one gold coin to a player of your choice. So you can form up alliances or, I suppose, enemy ships with other players.
That's fun. I like it.
Yeah, if you like Agricola and you like D&D, grab it because it's a really good mix of the two.
Yujiro and I played an old-school game, Illuminati.
Great game.
Yeah. So people don't know, it's a Steve Jackson game. It's a Steve Jackson card game where you play the different Illuminati groups. The UFOs, the Bavarian Cthulhu, Illuminati. Servants of Cthulhu.
That's the Swiss bankers or something.
Yeah, the Gnomes of Zurich.
Oh, yeah.
Swiss bankers versus Cthulhu.
Who will win? Maybe they're on the same side.
And the idea is that you try to, those are the main groups, and you try to control all these other subgroups, like the Republicans, the Democrats, feminists, high fashion.
Coffee shops.
Yeah, the Postal Service.
Communists.
Welcome to Hulu Starbucks.
And you get...
It wasn't that funny, but it was even funny. It was just making this keep going.
Completely ignored him.
Sorry. Go ahead.
And you get an income, and the income is what really helps you interact with the other players, is because you can spend money to increase the difficulty to take control of one of these groups or to decrease the difficulty to take control of one of these groups. And you can actually spend it on each other's attempts. So we played that. We were told it was going to be about 90 minutes, but it took about 3 to 4 hours.
And we didn't finish the game.
Yeah.
And not because we were sick and tired of it. It was just kind of wanting to play other games too.
Yeah.
And we were running out of time.
Yeah.
So you said it was a pretty thick deck. There were a lot of cards in it.
Yeah.
Do you play until the cards are gone, or is there like a point scale?
God, no.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know how thick of a deck we're talking.
There's different goals. There's like a standard goal for everybody. Like for in a five, was it five of us or
yeah,
six
I think
of us?
It was five. In a five-player game, you're supposed to
the one who controls
gain control of. Was 10. It 10 or was it 12?
10 groups.
10 groups. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we heard 12, and then.
Yeah, the guy the game who almost won the game said, oh yeah, it's actually 10. he was a really nice guy.
Yeah,
so
yeah. He did a really good job explaining both the rules for that and the other game that we played. And every group has a secret goal, special goal. And it could be, for example, my group is the Bavarian Illuminati. And if the total of all of my groups has a power level, it's one of the ratings on the cards, of 35, I win.
Mine was Cthulhu, and it was destroy 8 subgroups.
And one of the groups, the UFOs, their special abilities, they can choose, their special goal was they choose a secret goal from one of the other groups.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, the cards are amusing. You're not going to be busting up looking at every card, but it was funny enough. And it was just a lot of fun to play. There was a lot of, it was the most interactive card game.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I've ever played.
Yeah. I'd say the interactivity was its like main strength. I mean, it's so fun. Like one moment, you know, everyone's kind of helping you take down this, you know, the leading player. And the next moment, everyone else is like ganging up on you because you're about to acquire this really nice subgroup and no one wants that to happen. And since I was Cthulhu, everyone was like paying me money to just, you know, destroy factions that they didn't want other players to acquire.
No.
It's just, yeah.
Sounds like a blast.
Yeah. So the big knock against the deck building card games that are the big fad right now is that they're not very interactive.
Mm.
And even like a game like Eminent Domain is kind of interactive, but this Illuminati, you're full on, you're always participating. As long as you have a few of these mega bucks, they call them, you're in the game.
Yeah, alliances are constantly shifting, and there's a lot of, you know, yeah.
Backstabbing.
Oh, and I loved every moment of it.
Yeah. And I didn't play, but it sounded interesting that you're allowed to cheat in it.
Well, they have special rules called cheating rules, uh-huh. Where you can say, like, okay, I pay, like, 30 mega bucks for this, but you actually don't even have to, like, pay 30, or you can, like, draw a card and say, oh, I got this, but you could, like, lie about it. We didn't play with those rules, but...
That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, so big thumbs up from Illuminati. And actually, of all the games I played that I didn't own, that would be the one I would want to go out and buy.
Yeah, actually, I would want to buy that, too.
Yeah.
And I even liked it more than Battlestar Galactica, of all things.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, after the convention.
Because, I mean, like, after playing it for 4 hours, I actually wasn't, like, tired, you know, whereas if I played, like, Battlestar Galactica for 4 hours, I'd be like, exhausted, so...
I'm surprised you're not like that after TI3. Like,
oh, he is.
TI3 just too tired to even do that.
Speaking of Battlestar Galactica, we played a game that was quite similar,
mm-hmm.
Called Resistance. And Resistance is just a really stripped down Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah. Battlestar Galactica in like 30 minutes? Was that kind of the thing?
Pretty much.
Something like that. Yeah, it's instead of finding the Cylons, you just find the spies. But all it is it's a card game with very few cards. You have like yes, no cards and succeed, fail cards. And you have a leader and you have spy and resistance cards. So you deal out these spy and resistance cards at the beginning of the game. Some people are spies and they know who they are. The spies know each other. Mm. And then you have like a leader and that the leadership role rotates every turn and the leader decides what teams to go on these missions. And the missions don't matter. They don't have any set objective. And the people that they pick, then everybody at the table votes on whether or not this is a good team to send on the mission. Mm. If people vote that it's a good team, then each team member gets a succeed and fail card. And then they secretly decide whether or not that mission succeeds or fails.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it sounds like a game where they basically took out all the best parts of Battlestar Galactica and just made it into a game. Because I find, you know, trying to figure out who the Cylon is to be the most interesting part of the game and just, you know, all the pointing fingers and accusations.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just full on. It's a lot of fun. We also talk about, like, good games to play with people who, you know, if you mixed language abilities. There's nothing that anybody has to read on the cards. It's all visual.
Yeah, there's no text whatsoever.
Yeah. And the rules are very simple, so it's definitely a great party game.
Hmm. Yeah, I really like that game. Part of the reason I picked up Lords of Waterdeep after the convention is only because they didn't have Resistance at the shop I went to.
Yeah.
That was definitely going to be my first buy.
Resistance is number two on my list of games I would buy after the convention.
I think it's number one for me, at least.
Hmm.
Just because, again, the visual style of everything on the cards looked nice. There's no text. And, yeah, I see it as like a really good party game, just like Lyle said, between gamers and non-gamers. Like, you don't have to be a gamer to play this. But,
yeah, all you got to do is say, spy. You're a spy.
You're a spy! You're a spy!
I said to one person, I said, your vocabulary is like one word right now, and it's spy. It's all directed at me. I played two games. I wasn't the spy in either one. I got accused, like, maybe
both
the most.
Times. Yeah. Because you always have shifty eyes.
Okay.
I agree.
So one of the games I played, finally, was a Discworld game. I think the Discworld game that I played was called Ankh-Morpork or something. Having never read any of the novels, I'm probably pronouncing that horribly wrong, but I actually broke one of my rules. Like I said before, that after Elfinland and Formula D, any game Ryan puts in front of me, I'll play because I know it's going to be good. And I had actually been kind of like holding off on playing Discworld because I've never read any of the books. And I'm like, people kept telling me, oh, well, if you read the books, it's going to be really funny. And I'm like, eh, well, I haven't. So the game might not actually be that good. But it was actually a really good game. It's just sort of an area control game in that you have like a map of this city that's divided into about 12 spaces. And you're dealt a roll card, which says your win conditions. And sometimes it's like control 5 areas of the city, or have a little minion guy in 9 areas, or these other little, you know, goals. And those are secret. And apart from that, the game reminded me a little bit of Magic the Gathering, because you're dealt a hand of 5 cards, and all you do during your turn, the only thing you do is play a card and follow the directions on the card. But the cards have instructions on them that say, like, place a follower, or play an additional card after this one, or give a card to someone, or take money. So even though it's just one action on a turn, you can essentially make, like, combinations in your hand so that you can empty your entire hand and do a lot during the turn. So I kind of like that, how it's, you know, you can sort of make all these combos, and it's really simple, but you just follow the instructions on the card.
So it's a card game?
It's a board game with cards, I guess. You know, you still have this board, and you put your pieces onto it to say, I control this area, or, you know, I have a building here. So would people who had read the Discworld novels think it's funny? Probably. I played with Christos, and I think he's read the novels, and so he was recognizing the characters from the card, or he was saying, oh yeah, this card makes sense for that person because that's what they do in the story. And
did he laugh?
Not really.
Okay, so.
So I guess it's not funny. Buzzkill.
It's hard for a board game to be funny. I remember we played that.
Kill Dr. Lucky?
There's that. Yeah, that too. What was that game? It was the Monty Python version of it.
Oh, you played Monty Python Flux.
Flux, that was it.
Yeah.
Not funny.
No, I don't know. I think Monty Python's funny, but like that was, yeah. I'm just playing cards that don't mean anything.
Oh, come on, man. You have to impersonate Monty Python for the next 2 minutes. Woo!
Was that one of the cards?
I think it was one of them was speaking in an English accent, and the other one was, say, 3 lines from a Monty Python film.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, anyway, the Discworld game I played didn't suffer from that. I just thought it was really, I don't know, it was really fun to play, and yeah.
I did think, what was that, Trailer Park Gods? Like, that was funny. That was a funny game. I don't know if you ever played that.
I did. I played it with you on a couple of occasions on lunch break. It was a fun game, but it didn't make me laugh.
No? No. Not the 25 cents for this Dogs on Velvet, or... Is this price firm? No.
Barely laughs. That was hilarious. You can't make someone think something's funny.
Yeah, maybe if I just repeat it badly, slowly, half remember. Another game that you drew and I played is called Neuroshima Hex, and that's it's a Polish game, and it is a tile placement game. So you play on a really small board, even like you have like 4 players. You have 4 different. It's a war game, tile placement war game. And you have your army, which is basically tiles, which are both the units and special units and actions, such as move or battle or airstrike. And you draw up to 3 tiles every turn, and then you place them on this limited board, and you have melee attacks and ranged attacks. Everybody's got a headquarters, and that's what that's the real win condition, is damaging the other person's headquarters. And it is, yeah, it's pretty good. There's a lot of tactics behind such a small play area. What do you think, Deirdre?
Well, I only got to play for, what was it, half an hour? Because we had to, like, leave, but...
It's not a long game. I mean, we probably would have finished the game in half an hour if there wasn't a rules explanation to start it off.
If people knew what they were doing.
I was the one, I theoretically knew what I was doing. I was the one that lost severely then.
No, yeah, I would have enjoyed the game, I think, if I'd had an opportunity to play it out. I mean, because you've got, like, different factions and different tactics and all that, and, like, they've got, like, different strengths and weaknesses, so you've got to kind of adjust. And...
Did they really feel different, or, like, did they seem like they would play differently, not having played it?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because each faction had, like, really unique units that, like, I think the one that Lyle played specialized in, like, defense or something like that.
Yeah, it had a lot of guys, like, shield guys.
What was the theme of it? It was, like, a medieval thing? Because you said
no, it's, like, science fiction. Post-apocalyptic, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, so your units look like robots or guys in power armor.
Creepy aliens.
Yeah, creepy aliens. They have, like, I think one unit is like a floating gunship or gunball.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, it was really good. Yeah.
The board looks tiny. Apparently you can, like, get it on the iPod too, or
a lot of the people at the convention were talking about, I played this on the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to play.
Yeah.
I've been dying to play with actual people. And yeah, Neuroshima Hex was one of the ones that got a lot of play on the iPad.
Well, I think that's a new thing. I just recently bought Agricola and Ticket to Ride for myself, and both of them came with leaflet flyers by our app on the iPhone. I downloaded Blockus because they had a free trial as well. So yeah,
can you play with other people on those things?
I don't think so. I didn't get the Agricola ones, but I did get Blockus, and it doesn't have multiplayer mode. Mm-hmm. Very, very oddly.
And you, Drew, and I also played Wrath of Ashardlan, which is the Dungeons and Dragons adventure board game. And I had actually brought that to the convention. I've been dying to play it.
And I'm glad you brought it.
Yeah, and we were lucky. You don't actually have, like, a game master for that game. You play and you can play solo, actually, and you just draw from the decks and follow what they say. But one guy who had played it before, Rob, he was nice enough to agree to be, like, a game master to help us along with the rules, because we had, like, 6 people, and it was maximum 5. And we had a lot of fun. It got a little intense at some point, and it's...
Yeah, especially at the start, really, when all the monsters and traps and just popping
What was
up
your line, though, Lyle?
Oh, yeah, it's like, what did you expect? We come into a dungeon, and there's monsters here? No, no, there's also gonna be monsters.
I didn't sign up for this!
Yeah. It's tile game. Of course, different from Neuroshima Hex, but very similar to something like Descent or HeroQuest, and you build this dungeon every time you, like, go to an unexplored edge.
Bad
you
stuff happens, basically. New monsters pop up, new traps pop up, yeah.
And Wrath of Ashardlan, you have a choice to play either a paladin, a wizard, or I should say an elven paladin, a dragonborn wizard, a dwarven fighter, a human cleric, and a half-orc rogue. And just like 4E, Dungeons & Dragons 4E, you can choose your at-wills and your at-wills, your dailies, and your utility powers. They play slightly different than the actual role-playing game, but similar enough that it's an easy transition from that game to the role-playing game.
They don't do hit points, right? They only do, like, 1 or 2 points of damage.
No, they do hit points.
Yeah, hit points. Players have 8 hit points, I think, most of them.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I meant, like, when you, there's no, like, a die roll for damage when you swing your sword.
Oh, yeah, they do whatever the, I could do 1 point of damage, I had an ability to make, can do 2, and then my big power, I could do 3.
Okay.
And then, of course, if you have, like, a special weapon, it might up that as well.
I imagine that really speeded things along, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it has all the core stuff that, of course, it doesn't have skills or role-playing, but it has things
like...
Delicious
like 4E, yes.
It has armor class, hit points, a hit roll, a d20.
I didn't play, but it looked gorgeous. I've seen all the little figures, the models for it.
And the plastic's really nice because it's kind of a spongy plastic. Mm-hmm. So you toss them back into the box. They're not brittle.
Mm-hmm.
So is it like the plastic from Descent then?
I can't remember the plastic from Descent.
That's kind of soft too.
Okay, then it's like the plastic from Descent. Sorry, I
that tone said that question is irrelevant. Why did you even ask me?
As he spoke from under his shifty eyes.
So if you've been feeling up Descent Miniatures, then you know it's not going to be easy transition.
Speaking of which, is it a good gateway game for D&D, do you reckon?
Yeah, like I said, all the core concepts are there. The guy who was showing us the game, Rob, he said that some people have gone online to... you can only go up to level 2.
Mm-hmm.
So Rob, who showed us the game, he said that some people have developed like level 3 and 4 for these characters. But I would think, why?
Why not just go to the...
You could move on to the role-playing game if you really like the idea of like leveling up and really customizing your character even more than play the role-playing game. And then, of course, you can use all those miniatures from Wrath of Shylon and build your little
dungeon. You
can even
do the dungeon with the maps.
Yeah. As a big fan of the D&D combat system, did you better or worse?
I'd say, well, it's obviously a more simplified combat system. So, I mean, if you like having lots of options, it's not as fun. But, I mean, like, the way the game is balanced, I thought was great. Maybe, well, then again, I only played one game, but it always felt like we were being challenged, but that it was never something that we couldn't overcome. So, I mean, the challenge level was just right, I'd say.
So did you feel like it was, because you said it, you felt challenged, but not like something you couldn't overcome. And I know like some people have complained like 4E, it's like it's always kind of balanced in favor of the players a little bit. And people feel like eventually you will win an encounter in 4E. Did you feel that way in the board game? Or did you feel we have like a 50-50 chance of winning or losing, but we're not being overwhelmed by this challenge?
No, because the way the game works is every time you explore a new tile or every time your round comes up, basically you get these things called encounter cards. And encounter cards are basically another way of saying like bad shit happens. Just either monsters pop up or like traps pop up. So the situation was...
Wow.
So the situation's constantly changing. It's not like 4E combat where... Well, I don't know.
I move
like,
and then I hit him.
There are 5 monsters on the board, and once you kill those 5 monsters, or once you whittle them down to like 2 or 3, it's just a slugfest, you know. You know you're gonna win. And the situation isn't gonna change for Team Monster, but in Wrath of Ashardalon, it's like...
Team Monster could win?
Well, Team Monster just keeps on becoming a bigger and bigger team.
Yeah, it's an interesting mechanic where you place a tile, every tile's got like a scorch mark, they call it. And it says you place one monster on there. I think perhaps you could place more depending on like an encounter card that you draw, but generally you place one monster. And reading the rules, you're like, one monster? That's it?
We're going to cream
but
these
that
guys.
Builds up. They have a rule, it's like whoever drew the tile or draws the monster, so to speak, they place the card in front of them, and it means whenever they get a hero phase and a villain phase. And whenever their villain phase comes up, that means their monster is activated. But they have a nice rule, which makes it really exciting, is that if more than one of the same monster comes up, then it activates
all monsters of those types. There was this one situation where there were 3 orcish archers and 2 gibbering mouthers, and it was just one of those like real, oh crap kind of moments, because we were going to get pounded if we didn't take out those guys real fast, so.
Yeah, it got pretty... People got pretty excited playing that game, so...
Yeah.
That was nice to see.
Definitely. That's an understatement, but yeah.
I imagine I'd have a blast with it.
I think you would.
To roll dice and yell.
Well, seriously, I really enjoy games where it's rolling dice and running around just kidding stuff, so yeah.
Oh yeah, and I really like their experience point mechanic, where every time you kill a monster, you get, like, experience, and you can either hold on to the experience and hope you roll a 20 and get a chance to level up, or you can spend the experience points to basically negate an encounter card and say, okay, that bad stuff doesn't happen.
It's pretty cool.
So, yeah, it's...
I kept not wanting to negate the encounters and getting voted down.
Because you wanted level, yeah. Whoa, we didn't want to die. So
yeah, I was like, oh, I want to level up. You don't want to die.
So you only have the chance of leveling when you roll a natural 20.
Or when you get the special magic item. And magic items were another interesting thing. It's... every time you kill a monster, you get a random magic item, and that also...
Some good ones,
Yeah, definitely.
Like I got a Vorpal Sword at the end.
Yeah, and you're like level 2?
I was level 1. I never leveled up.
Yeah.
And actually, there's how the party can lose. Besides, of course, everybody dies, but the healing surges are a way for the party to lose. And I think the standard is you get 2 healing surges for the party. So when one of your guys drops to 0, it's a healing surge, and of course, just like the D&D 4E, you'll
Wolverine, you're back to full health.
Yeah, well, unlike D&D, then you lose that one healing surge disc, and now you got another one. So, I mean, the whole party couldn't drop down to zero hit points, or because you would lose. Yeah,
kind of like a little bit like conquest points for Descent.
Yeah. It was a really a nice balance. It felt more dangerous than actual 40, but, you know, maybe if we went into a dungeon that was very monster and trap heavy, then it would kind of feel that way. But the guy who's playing the wizard, he had played a 4E game, an actual D&D 4E the previous day, and it was designed to kill off the, I think it was called Death for Breakfast, and it was designed to, like, everybody was going to be killed off. Well, and he said Wrath of Ashardalon was more dangerous.
Wow.
Maybe just because it's more contained.
Yeah. And if you only have 8 hit points, too, that makes it a bit scarier.
And the final new game that I played was 1812, The Invasion of Canada. I think that's a relatively new game.
Did you play on the Canada side?
Yeah, I did. Both times. Both times.
Did you kick some Yankee ass, eh?
Once I lost, and once I won. Eh?
And the time you lost was a practice game, so it didn't count, right?
Yeah. I didn't feel I had to, like, play up my Canadian accent. So the game is, one side's the Americans, one side's the Canadians, of course, but it's both cooperative and competitive. So you have the American regulars and the American militia are you can have two players. And on the Canadian side, you can have the British regulars, the Canadian militia, and the First Nations people. So you have up to 3 players on the Canadian side. They're little color blocks, and it's all on the border, because you're looking, like 1812, that's all, it's the only place people lived in Canada. The turn order is decided randomly. You put these blocks, the 5 different blocks, into a bag, and you draw it, and that's the person that goes next. So you can't really predict and plan that way. But I think it added something to the game. I think I'm not sure if it's a unique feature, but an interesting feature is that you can conceivably have everybody participating every turn, and that the army composition can be a mix of the three forces, or on the American side, the 2 forces. As long as you've got one of your colored blocks in that army, you can move it using your cards. So movement is determined by these your hand. And also in your hand are special cards that give you, like, bonuses. And they're quite powerful. But once you get into battle, everybody rolls for themselves. So it's your turn, so you're the person that's moving the armies, but you can move, like, a bicolor or a tricolored army to battle in, you know, the other person, and then everybody gets to roll. And you roll these special dice, and depending on which army you have, determines, like, how many sides of a certain thing you have. But there's 3 different things that can happen. You can kill the opponent, you can flee, it's a blank, and that means you can choose to retreat, or you can choose to stand your ground. Now, the regulars actually don't have a flee on their die, or on their dice. And the militia have a lot of flea, or more flea than the others. And the First Nations were in between. But yeah, it was really, really fun. It was really, really easy to pick up. And the games can be quite close. There's always a chance that you can come back. And even though, like, it is random, you can have it where one side goes 1, 2, 3. And we've had that where all the Canadians go 1, 2, 3. But then the Americans they clean up the turn, you know, with 4 and 5. So it really seemed balanced that way. There's both advantages to going first, there's advantages to going last. So yeah, I was really, really impressed, and I believe kicked off my convention. So you know, it was a good sign.
So even though the convention is over,
it still lives on in our hearts.
Yeah, that too, and you can look forward to it next year. But if you can't wait, the Japan International Gamers Guild Kansai branch, they're running game days the first Sunday of every month down in Namba, which is the same place the convention was this year. So it's actually a pretty central location, at least for me. All I had to do was hop on the bus to get down there. But
yeah, it's pretty convenient. I noticed, like, after a convention, everybody gets really excited. So there's already a Kyoto game day that's popped up, and a Kobe game day that's popped up for next month. So yeah, people are still got the gamer in them.
Yeah. On that game.
All right. So, and also a reminder, next week we'll be posting up part 2 of the apocalypse. So that's where we're going to cover the post-apocalyptic era. Or period.
All right. Well, I hope everyone's looking forward to that. As usual, you can find us online, www.idleredhands.com, metalredhands.com. Listen to the episodes right there on the website, through iTunes, through Stitcher, or download them from our DriveThruRPG. You can also post up some comments there on the website, in our forums, send us an email, follow our Twitter feed, or do anything to get a hold of us, because we always love hearing from you. And, see y'all next time.
Bye.
Bye.
I guess it's my turn. Bye.
Just cut it all out.
Drive through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.